Yemeni families have lost dozens of relatives to U.S. drone strikes and Special Operations Forces raid during the Obama and Trump administrations filed a petition recently against the United States government, accusing it of unlawful killing. Agence France-Presse reports the International Legal Advocacy Organization Reprieve filed the petition recently through the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights on behalf of Al-Amiri and Al-Taisi families. The petition states that seven attacks at issue have resulted in the unlawful killing of at least 48 people, including 17 children, and serious injury of at least seven others, as well as the destruction of their personal property and livelihoods. 34 of those killed were members of the two families. Vice reports the Al-Amiris and Al-Taisis had come together on December 12, 2013 in Al-Baida province to celebrate the marriage of Abdullah Makut Al-Amiri and his wife, Varda Al-Taisi. The families were traveling in a traditional wedding procession from the bride's home when a U.S. unmanned aerial drone launched four missiles at them, killing 12 people. That was just the beginning. Over the following 5 years, the families were attacked six more times by U.S. drones. The year 2017 was especially deadly as 22 members of the families were killed in airstrikes and a ground attack. The ground attack, which occurred in the village of Al-Ghail in Yakla area on January 29, 2017, and involved U.S. Navy SEALs, one of whom was killed, claimed the lives of as many as 30 civilians, including 15 members of the Al-Amiri and Al-Taisi families. The UK-based Bureau of Investigative Journalism reported 9 children killed during the Yakla raid. Among these was Nawar Al-Awlaki, an 8-year-old U.S. citizen who, according to her grandfather, was hit with a bullet in her neck and suffered for 2 hours. Nawar was the daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki, a radical American who was assassinated by a U.S. drone strike in Yemen in 2011, and the half-brother of Colorado native Abdurrahman al-Awlaki, who at age 16 was killed along with his 70-year-old cousin and several others while dining at an outdoor restaurant in Yemen by a drone strike ordered by then-President Barack Obama. When pressed about why Obama had ordered an attack that killed an innocent American teenager, Robert Gibbs, the president's press secretary, said the child should have had a far more responsible father. According to the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, the U.S. has carried out at least 336 drone strikes in Yemen between 2004 and 2020. The strikes, which span three presidential administrations, have killed as many as 1,389 people, including up to 225 civilians, among them 44 to 50 children. Drone strikes in Yemen began during the George W. Bush administration and sharply escalated under Obama. Former President Donald Trump vowed to bomb Yemen, and he followed through his promise, dramatically increasing strikes and casualties not only in Yemen, but in nearly all of the half-dozen Muslim nations under attack by the U.S. during the so-called War on Terror. Estimates of the number of civilians killed during the unending 19-year-old war range from the hundreds of thousands to as many as 2 million. The incessant threat of death from above has terrorized civilians from Eastern Africa to Pakistan. It's a life with constant fear. Muhammad Ali Makut Al-Amiri a survivor of four of the attacks listed in the reprieve petition, told Vice. You always feel tense, he added. If you go out in your vehicle, you're afraid. If you walk out individually, you're always afraid to leave the village because you think you might be mistaken and targeted. The petitioning families are seeking precautionary measures, something like an injunction against assassination and an explanation from the U.S. Jennifer Gibson, a human rights attorney and project lead on extrajudicial killing at Reprieve, told AFP that what the families are hoping for from the commission is first and foremost recognition of harm that's been done to them. Gibson told reporters that the families are searching for answers and they have been blocked from getting any sort of answer from the U.S. government. So they're now going to the Inter-American Commission, hoping to get from them the answers and the relief that they have not been able to get from the U.S. government or from the U.S. courts, she said. The families are trying in every way they can to almost literally raise their hand and say, hey, wait a minute, you're hitting us. Yemenis, please stop hitting us and let us put forward that the evidence that we are not whoever you think, added Gibson. The U.S. attacks on Yemen came amid a much wider war waged by a U.S.-backed, Saudi-led coalition has killed more than 100,000 people, thousands of them in airstrikes. Many of the coalition's weapons, including the bombs and the planes that drop them, are made in and sold by the United States regime. Earlier this week, the Biden administration temporarily halted the sale to Saudi Arabia of nearly $500 million worth of so-called precision bombs manufactured by Raytheon Technologies, as well as of Lockheed Martin F-35 fighter jets to United Arab Emirates regime. The bombing of Yemen, along with a Saudi-led economic blockade that has exacerbated famine conditions that have killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, has created what the United Nations and others have called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdullah Abdrabo Obad Al-Taisi told reporters he hopes the change in administrations in Washington, D.C. will bring some justice to victims of U.S. attacks. We're hoping because there is a new administration in the White House and they will look into things differently, maybe, he said. We want them to know that we are innocent. We want them to consider fair reparations for our families and children. All that we ask is a transparent investigation.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, Assalamu Alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaykum Assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me.
And Brother Ali Alavian, Assalamu Alaikum, brother.
Wa Alaykum Assalam. Thank you for having me here.
So, in this series of the program Viewpoints produced by Brother Mahmoud, we are dedicating our discussions to some of the most important speeches of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei regarding different occasions. And since these days, especially in the month of Bahman, which is the 11th month according to the solar calendar in Islamic Republic of Iran, a very big event took place about 42 years ago. And that was the Islamic Revolution of Iran, which we can say led to the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran, founded by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. There are so many discussions regarding the Islamic Republic of Iran and Islamic Revolution. Of course, this revolution is a rough translation for what happened as Enghilab in Iran, because usually revolution has a negative connotation, but this Enghilab was a change, a political change, social change, religious change inside Iran. And now we know it, this country all across the world, the United Nations, by the name Islamic Republic of Iran, or the Islamic Republic of Iran. Okay, brothers, let's get to some of the most important values and the concepts which were introduced by the late Imam Khomeini in the new political system of Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Brother Ali Alavian, let's start with you. At the very beginning, the people chanted in Iran, in Farsi, I say it, Istiqlal Azadi Jumhuri Islami. If you want to roughly translate it, it would be Independence, Freedom, Islamic Republic. Independence and freedom from what? And what kind of freedom the people were looking for?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his Immaculate Progeny. There are different kinds of freedom that we can talk about, and also independence actually is quite clear, and inshallah I shall comment on that as well. And it will lead, I mean, from this freedom and also independence will be led to Islamic Republic. By freedom, actually different kinds of freedom are looked at. One is individual freedom, and also civil freedom of the people, of the every single people in the nation. The people should be free to present, to say their own ideas and their ideas and rights, and also to write whatever they want to say, but within the limits of the Islamic framework. Mm-hmm. So this Islamic framework should be actually seen as a limit. So you might say that, okay, brother, you are limiting people from one side and tell them that you are talking about freedom. Look, the concept of freedom is not something absolute anywhere in the world or in anywhere. Freedom has been defined everywhere in the world. By freedom, actually, we believe that this freedom should have a framework for itself. And the framework of the freedom that we are talking about is to say whatever we like to say as a human being, up to the point that it does not actually damage and hurt the Islamic values. So this freedom actually has been defined. And if we look at in the Islam, so what is the border, what are the borders of this freedom? Human beings are free to say whatever they like, and in case they are saying something or want to present something, to write something against the pillars of the religion.
Is this really the true meaning of freedom Imam Khomeini was after? When we are talking about Azadi and freedom in the religious sense of the matter, it encompasses a broader, we can say, arena and scope. When we are talking about spiritual freedom and religious freedom, it does not necessarily mean to be free and do whatever you like, but it means to be free from, we can say, the materialistic mundane world which is around you. And also freedom from the chains of the capitalism and liberalism on that time. Mm-hmm. Wasn't this azadi that Imam Khomeini was after and coming and being juxtaposed with istiqlal, which is independence, was a kind of freedom from the, we can say, the chains and the shackles of the time? Because freedom means being free from the shackles and the chains. And at that time, we know that this hegemony that existed in the world wanted to rule over all the countries. Mm-hmm. Wasn't this freedom we talked about in Iran, we can say Imam Khomeini introduced it, can it be interpreted this way too?
Let's differentiate between these two kinds of freedom. Mm-hmm. Freedom that actually is for the whole state and for the whole nation. And it can be even interpreted as independence. And this independence is also a sort of freedom from mm-hmm. the, let's say, chain of the pressures of the pressures coming from outside. So this independence by itself is sort of freedom in the scale of a nation. But second kind of freedom that we are talking about is personal civil freedom, or let's say individual freedom mm-hmm. that we are going to even talk about and pay attention to even in this session. So when we are saying istiqlal azadi, independence and freedom, so the first kind is in the nation scale and the second is in an individual scale. So all the rights of the all human beings who are living in this country should be respected and should be valued. In Islam, humans are looked at as free. Free in the sense that they can say whatever they want. But they should not nullify, but it should not nullify the borders of, let's say, logic, the borders of
humanitarian values.
The borders of humanitarian values. That's and right. Whatever actually makes human great. Mm-hmm. So naturally, the outcome of these two sorts of freedom will be a republic state, a republic government. Mm-hmm. So,
which is based on the people's vote.
Very true.
And this was, we can't say,
so in
the differentiation.
We say in the second form of freedom that we have been talking about, mm-hmm. in individual or civil freedom, so the votes of the people are counted, taken into account. Mm-hmm. It means that people, unlike the previous regimes, that the people's vote were not seen based on lots of documents and evidences that mm-hmm. we see here, and they are available. The votes and the viewpoints of people were not looked at and were not actually respected. But
that's
we see
right.
that after 42 years of Islamic revolution, mm-hmm. more than 45 elections have been actually performed and
were conducted
in this country. Mm-hmm. And people see that even from the top, the toppest person, the most responsible person in this government is directly or indirectly elected by the people.
The
so they see the importance of their votes.
Okay.
But did we have such a thing even at the time of the kings before? So did we ourselves?
Sure, in the monarchy system, we did not have, because we had the prime minister.
Let's go down. A bit down. I mean, to the lower levels.
Yes.
People did not see their power to change, for example, even a minister or to change a prime minister.
Okay.
So now they feel that they are a part of this society. So it does not mean that we don't have any deficiency or any problem in this issue.
Thank you very much, Brother Ali Alavian. And Said Mohsen, do you believe that the people's role, we can say, in the fate and the destiny of the country, was taken from the Islamic Sharia, or was it something based upon the political, we can say, values of the modernity? Because in the political values of the modernity, the we can say the voting system and the election its own has, we can say, value. But for Imam Khomeini and for his in his school of thought, was this election that was done, was it something taken from the Western world or no? In Islamic system and in Islamic establishments and states, we had this system already.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, in Islam, we have a concept which is called being mabsutul yad. Mm-hmm. The word mabsutul yad is the Arabic terminology, which means that the ruler of the Islamic state should have an open hand. Mm-hmm. And whatever he orders, people must follow him. If I give you the example of the history, regardless of pointing about the dispute that we have in the history, why Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, he spent 25 years in home? Because people of that time, or maybe the people who were around them, they did not allow him to basically freely govern the Islamic State after the Prophet, and they chose other people. So in other words, he wasn't Mabsutul Yad. He was Imam, he was the leader. Mm-hmm. He has that state from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But obviously, unless people do not follow the leader,
that's right,
he cannot apply all the Islamic, we can say, like,
and he respected them. This is beautiful. Yes. Yeah, he respected the people's idea, isn't it?
He respected. Why? Yes. Because obviously Imam, in order to apply the rules, he must have this, we can say, like, he must be in this state.
Yes.
Why Imam Khomeini, when he came to Iran, the very first day, he asked for the referendum? It was because if they are accepting him as a leader, as an Islamic leader of the state, or the wali faqih, or the faqih, or the leader, he must have an open hand in applying all the rules. And once they choose him, then he has to apply all the rules, and they have to follow him. So that was the referendum.
That's right.
In the definition of democracy, generally it is stated that the system of government by the whole population or all the eligible members of the state, they are elected by the representatives.
Yes.
That's what it is said.
Yes.
In the Islamic, obviously, revolution, we see that the whole Islamic revolution, the values and the obviously the things that it had, it was under the Islamic Sharia, mm-hmm. number one. Within the Islamic Sharia says the people should be free. They should have the freedom. Obviously, they should be obviously have the spirituality. The means of spirituality should be provided to them. And the Islamic ruler should apply all the Islamic rules. Now, when we talk about the role of the people within the Islamic Sharia, within the Islamic context, it means that the leader is one. After that, obviously, people can choose a person who is aslah, who is pious, for example, who is a God-weary person, to be their representative and to manage their place.
The main difference with the democracy in the West is over here, because
yes.
in the electoral college electoral votes in now, for example, in the United States of America, we see that these elites and, as you said, representatives, we can say the main characteristics are not being Muslim or religious or something like that, okay? So the main difference over here is that in the Islamic Republic.
Yes.
That representative must be according,
we can,
yeah.
Yes, we can see even at the time of the caliphates,
mm-hmm.
Or even in the time of Imam Ali, there were people where the khulafa or the caliph, they used to send a representative to a place, being the governor.
Yes.
But in some places, people refused to accept him.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we have a person who is better than him, we
mm-hmm.
think. So they respected this value.
Okay.
This respect is obviously, this gives a more, we can say, like power to the ruler.
Right.
Of the time of the state.
That's right.
So Imam Khomeini, being the leader of the Islamic revolution, he very first, obviously, he did the referendum.
That's right.
In order to know whether the people are accepting me, because this is one of the means. Once you vote mm-hmm. for something, you're
yes.
responsible for it.
Yes.
Once the whole nation voted for the Islamic state, Imam Khomeini announced it as the Islamic Republic, and that's
mm-hmm.
why it has the name of Republic over
yes.
there.
Republic,
it's not because
yeah.
like people
yeah.
they voted for Imam
yes.
and they unvoted Shah, for example,
mm-hmm.
the king,
mm-hmm.
or they voted for him. Being a leader, they said we want the Islamic state.
That's right.
Imam Khomeini named it as, in respect of people, he named it as Islamic Republic, because it's the nation, the whole nation wanted to be the Islamic state.
Thank you much, Brother Ali Alavian and Said Mohsen Naqvi, for presence
mm-hmm.
in the program. Viewpoints and analysis on the thoughts and works of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. You can download for free our previous episodes of the program Viewpoints on our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. Also, visit our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
الوحي كان وقام الإمام قام الإمام
قام الإمام
وقامت برايا وكر الأنام كر الأنام
قام الإمام
جماهير إيران في صحوة تداعت إلى الساح وسط الزحام
وقامت أسودا تلبي الخمين نداء السماء وغيث الغمام
وعاد الإمام إلى أرضه ليملأ عدلا بلاد الكرام
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us present you the statement of the Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, and the timeless wisdom of God Almighty's final revelation to mankind, the Holy Quran. The Book of Allah is the guide of its followers towards the pleasure of Allah, listening carefully to its leads to the salvation. The enlightened and conspicuous evidences and proofs of Allah can be obtained through it, and also the knowledge of His interpreted intentions and fear-invoking constraining prohibitions. His sufficing testimonies and conspicuous arguments and desired virtues and allowed endowments and gifts and obligatory divine laws.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome to the light. It's good to have you. Beginning with our canine companions, the sniffing abilities of dogs are being put to the test at a leading French veterinary laboratory where dogs are being trained to detect the coronavirus. Five dogs from the canine brigades of the French National Gendarmerie have been training since early January. They sniff at a number of vessels, each containing a piece of cloth with human sweat. Some samples are from patients with COVID-19, negative donors, or even neutral scents. When the canine shows interest in a vessel with a COVID-19 sample, it is rewarded.
It will soon be necessary to screen asymptomatic people in all kinds of spaces, schools, nursing homes, which must continue to be better understood and defined, and airports. This type of tool, which makes it possible to offer at least one strong criterion of suspicion, will facilitate the whole process in terms of user-friendliness, accessibility, and reactivity.
Well, the dog's keen sense of smell is said to be able to detect the coronavirus in 95% of positive cases. It's hoped that the canines will be able to detect COVID-positive people even if they show no symptoms. The animals can be used as a non-invasive way of testing for the viral infection, as well as many other life-threatening illnesses. Igloo, a dome-shaped structure made of snow and ice, gives us an idea of the Inuit of Arctic. But hang on. The ski resort hotel in Indian-controlled Kashmir has come up with a similar idea to attract visitors. The Kolahoy Green Heights has an igloo cafe where tourists can enjoy hot drinks and food in sub-zero temperatures. Even the tables in the Eskimo-style cafe are made of ice and snow. As many as 16 people can sit and chill out in the igloo at any given time. The icy cafe is 25 feet around. Unlike those on the Arctic, this particular igloo has elements of local architecture, like an arched door and patterns on the curved walls.
A French-Swiss artist spray paints a huge fresco on the grounds of Cape Town as part of a global project aimed at fostering unity in a polarized world. The 31-year-old artist tries to convey his message of togetherness in his movement called Beyond Walls. The project consists of frescoes depicting two hands clasping each other's forearms around the world. South Africa's Cape Town represents an essential step of the project due to its history marked by apartheid. The self-taught artist says he wants to create the biggest human chain in the world, and Cape Town is his ninth step.
Because for me, I really trust that it's only together that humanity can respond to the biggest challenge of our time. And this is this message that I want to do by making huge fresco with biodegradable paint directly on the grass. It is a worldwide project, and the idea is to create the biggest human chain to speak about togetherness. And today in Cape Town, this is the ninth step of this project.
Saip uses paint made out of charcoal, chalk, water, and milk proteins to create his art, making it eco-friendly. He was also named one of the most influential young artists by Forbes magazine for his art, which is best viewed from aerial footage. His temporary biodegradable images have been previously painted on lawns in 8 cities, including Paris, Andorre, Geneva, Berlin, Ouagadougou, and Istanbul.
A Russian firm has developed a flying taxi in an attempt to solve the problem of transportation in megacities. According to HoverSurf company, testing the aircraft is now in the final stages. If successful, the drone taxi will go into mass production at the end of 2021. Special runways are not required as the vehicle is as big as a normal car and can land on a parking lot. Designers say it's capable of carrying 2 people or up to 300 kilograms of cargo.
The prototype of this flying machine will soon turn into a social device that we're going to build in 2021. And thus, all the technologies that we have already built will be applied to this machine. The car will fly with a new type of engine that is installed here.
The flying taxi can reach an altitude of 150 meters and develop a speed of up to 200 kilometers per hour. The company says a flight with air taxi will cost around 27 cents per kilometer. The name Afghanistan may remind many people across the world of some bad news of war, violence and poverty. This is mainly due to the war in Afghanistan, which has been going on for over the past decades. Yet there are some interesting stories about Afghanistan, its people and their traditions and customs, such as Afghans' food culture. Amin Alami has more in this report.
When it comes to cooking and traditional dishes, Afghans have a lot to say. First of all, this is important to know that meat and rice are inseparable parts of Afghans' food culture.
Afghan traditional dishes like qabili, kebab, karai, mantu, ashak, bulani, and dur are the some you can find available in restaurants, mainly serving traditional delicacies. Each one of these represents the food culture of specific tribes and ethnic groups.
Let's see what the manager of this restaurant has to say about some popular local dishes in Afghanistan.
When you want to talk about traditional foods of Afghanistan, you need to test different dishes that are, of course, very delicious. For instance, qabili is a mixture of rice, carrot, cuisine, and lamb meat. Northern Afghanistan is the home to this delicious food, while Western Herat province is well known for its delicious kachiri.
There are some key factors which should be taken into consideration when talking about Afghan food culture. As Afghans themselves say, their food is highly organic. They believe the food culture has made Afghans' bodies much stronger than those who do not have organic meals and their food culture.
We can't leave out meat from cooking. Additionally, our food culture is based on using organic products. This has even helped us have a stronger body.
As there is a wide variety of delicious dishes here, the good news is that the prices are not high. For example, you can serve a complete lunch menu at one of the top restaurants in Kabul by spending at most $15.
If you compare food prices in Afghanistan and other countries, you will find out that you can have the best dish in a top restaurant in Afghanistan by paying less than $20. The quality of food in our country is also better.
As observers say, Afghanistan has many capabilities and interesting attractions to be truly introduced for the globe if the war and politics allow this wounded land to breathe. Sayed Amin Alimi, Kabul.
After nearly 3 years of conservation efforts, a group of newborn leaf monkeys have been recently spotted in southwest China. The rare monkeys, which fall under China's first-class national protection program, were spotted earlier this month in Mangshi City in Yunnan province. The baby monkeys sport golden fur, which will gradually turn gray when they are about 3 months old. Forest keepers have been noting an increase in the number of monkeys and expect their population to continue growing as biodiversity is improving.
Since the beginning of this year, we have spotted 11 little golden monkeys and several pregnant adult monkeys. It can be estimated that the number of these golden newborns will increase to around 20 by April.
Leaf monkeys are spread across western Yunnan as well as in eastern and northern Myanmar. Over the past few years, Yunnan's local government has strengthened protection for the animals. It's estimated there are now approximately 400 leaf monkeys in Mangshi.
Scientists have discovered a 20-million-year-old fossilized tree with intact branches and roots on the Greek island of Lesbos. The 19-meter-long tree was found near a petrified forest formed millions of years ago by a volcanic eruption. A thick layer of ash had preserved the tree. Since excavations began 25 years ago, this is the first time a tree in such proper condition has been uncovered in the area. Experts have been studying the unique forest to gather information of plants and animals and reconstruct the ecosystem that existed 20 million years ago.
In Slovenia, two climbers have dared to scale Europe's tallest chimney. Janja Granbrej and Damen Skopic managed to complete the challenge in 7 hours and 32 minutes. They described the experience as the most difficult one in their professional lives. The 360-meter-high tower at the Trebevil power station is located in eastern Slovenia. It is known as the world's longest artificial multi-pitch climbing route.
Oh, isn't this sweet? A baby panda gluing to her zookeeper's leg has grabbed attention on social media, with her video receiving at least 4 million hits on YouTube alone. 6 months-old Fu Bao lives in a South Korean zoo. Her video went viral, showing the cub gripping her keeper's leg during a regular checkup. The cute panda refused to let the keeper go, even when he tried to walk away. Fu Bao is the first giant panda born in South Korea. Her parents arrived in the country in 2016 as part of China's panda diplomacy. Fu Bao has received enormous attention since her birth, with her videos posted on the zoo's social media. Elephants at a zoo in the U.S. state of Arizona have enjoyed a rare snowy day, romping joyfully under the white flurry. While most of animals in Ride Park Zoo cozied up in the warmth, the elephants could not resist the snowfall in the sun-kissed state. They stayed out, with baby elephants splashing in their enclosure's pond and rolling in the mud. The baby elephants saw the snowfall for the first time in their life. Frosty flakes made their way to Arizona on Tuesday. That was a surprise for many in the U.S. West, which is plagued by drought.
That's it for the light. Thank you.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the
the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters in faith, Salamun Alaikum, and welcome to this program, today's special. At the first step, please accept our congratulations on Islamic Republic of Iran victory anniversary. Today, Sunday, is the 17th of Jamadi al-Thani, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 12th of Bahman, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 31st of January, 2020 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We'll listen to chapter Ma'idah from the Holy Quran, verse 3.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. حرمت عليكم الميتة والدم ولحم الخنزير وما أهل لغير الله به والمنخنقة والموقوذة والمتردية والنطيحة وما أكل السبع إلا ما ذكيتم وما ذبح على النصب وأن تستقسموا بالأزلام ذلكم فسق اليوم يئس الذين كفروا من دينكم فلا تخشوهم واخشون اليوم أكملت لكم دينكم وأتممت عليكم نعمتي ورضيت لكم الإسلام دينا فمن اضطر في مخمصة غير متجانف لإثم فإن الله غفور رحيم.
Prohibited to you are dead animals, blood, the flesh of swine, and that which has been dedicated to other than Allah, and those animals killed by strangling, or by a violent blow, or by a headlong fall, or by the goring of horns, and those from which a wild animal has eaten, except what you are able to slaughter before its death, and those which are sacrificed on stone altars. And prohibited is that you seek decision through divining arrows. That is grave disobedience. This day those who disbelieve have despaired of defeating your religion. So fear them not, but fear me. This day I have perfected for you your religion and completed my favor upon you and have approved for you Islam as religion. But whoever is forced by severe hunger with no inclination to sin, then indeed Allah is forgiving and merciful.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The firmness of the religious school depends on a correct leadership. So with its existence, all the infidels became hopeless at the time. If the leader of the day of Qadir and Velaya exist in the society, Muslims must not have any fear. The most important window of the hope of infidels was the departure of the Muslims' leader. By the assignment of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam for the leadership, That window was closed. However, the religion without having a leader is not complete.
In the month of Bahman, the month of Islamic Revolution, be with today's special.
On the anniversary of Islamic Republic of Iran's victory, we'll look at the fundamentals of Iran's Islamic Revolution. This is today's special by IRIB English Radio. Although the enemies under planning having tried to show that it is Shia revolution, while as in reality it is absolutely revolution of Islam, revolution of Quran, and a revolution for the supremacy of Islamic standard, and its pride lies in the fact that it has been presenting Islamic values, monotheism, divine laws, and Islamic moralities and values to the people of the world, and it has succeeded in it too. These people are having enmity with it and are opposing it. Otherwise, if the revolution would have been confined only to be a Shia revolution, we would have remained cut off from the world of Islam and we would have been in no touch with the world of Islam. The enemies also would have no concern, wouldn't had any enmity with the revolution. But they observe that it is absolutely an Islamic revolution, and since this revolution is Islamic, therefore it least matters for it whether Palestinians are Shia or Sunni, but it only defends them, and also it defends the great movement of Lebanon. Dr. Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi-nasta'in. Concerning the Islamic Revolution of Iran, it must be indicated that, as its name suggests, it has been the Islamic Revolution of Iran, particularly because its leader was the clerical personality Imam Khomeini. Now we find that the Islamic Revolution of Iran, which has got various aspects, I mean, throughout the history. In this context, we find that there are still certain, I mean, dimensions of the Islamic Revolution which deserve being elaborated, highlighted, and introduced to the world. In the first place, we find that Imam Khomeini initiated his movement. Based on what he felt to be done and should be done regarding the Islamic religion, at least in the Iranian context, but ultimately on the global scale. Imam Khomeini was the personality who represented the national dissatisfaction with the anti-Islamic policies and measures taken and adopted by the ex-Pahlavi royal regime.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Bahman presents today's special.
Imam Khomeini's political thought, alliance between religion and politics. The basic tenets of Imam Khomeini's political thought should be ascertained from his approach to the concepts of religion and politics. He had forwarded his ideas and these two concepts on different occasions and meanings from the very beginning of the Islamic movement in Iran. Imam Khomeini does not construe politics as a science of power or a kind of technique for exploiting people with a view to make them subordinate to certain rulers. He believes that usually unjust rulers possess such characteristics. Imam Khomeini terms such a politics a satanic politics and believes that it has nothing to do with religion. He says, a man once came to me and said, politics is nothing but telling lie and playing tricks. Hence, it is better for you to leave it to us. In response, I said that I had never been involved in such a politics. This is today's special on 12th of Bahman. So congratulations on the victory anniversary of Islamic Revolution of Iran. And now we have a story from the life of Imam Khomeini. It's about Ziyarat Ashura, Ashura supplication while walking. One of Imam Khomeini's associates said, Imam used all his time for studying and writing or other forms of worships that have been mentioned. If one were to study just those works that have been recorded and published and assign them to his blessed life, they will well understand how he used his hours and even minutes of his life and benefited greatly from them. Despite the fact that he was not a writer by nature, he even used his half-hour walks in the morning and afternoon, which he especially used to do near the end of his life at the advice of doctors. Imam had specific supplications and dhikr for that time so that he could carry out worship and work even while walking. And when he recited Ziyarat Ashura, Ashura supplication, he would usually recite the 100 curses and 100 salams while walking.
The distinguishing features of this great personality, Imam Khomeini, are not one or two. There are several. So the first thing is what he stood for, the pure Muhammadan Islam, al-Islamul Muhammadiyul Asil. So there were people, and there are still some people, who used to escape from their responsibility. Whereas Amir al-Mu'mineen in his khutbah al-Shiqshiqiyya is very clear when he says, Lawla hadurul hadir wa qiyamul hujja bi wujudin nasir, when all those people showed up on the fourth place. And now obviously the hujjat and evidence of Allah is completed. So he's gonna, you know, perform his duty now. And apart from that, وَمَا أَخَذَ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْعُلَمَاءِ, what Allah has taken, he's talking about the covenant that has been taken by Allah from the scholars not to stay silent and not to allow the zalim person to keep his stomach full and the mazloom and oppressed person to go hungry. It's the job of the scholars to take a step. But you find there were some in the Islamic Ummah who were not doing this responsibility. So this is the reason, this is one of the reasons why he had to use the adjective and add the adjective of the pure Muhammadan Islam, the Islam of the Holy Prophet.
We are on the Fajr decade, the days of victory anniversary of Islamic Republic of Iran. So accept our congratulations. Inshallah, we continue this discussion and we talk more about the fundamentals of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Till then, fi amanillah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.